For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 346 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week to celebrate the 2020 Cincinnati Reds, Jason Linden. How are you, Jason?
You know, I'm here.
You showed up?
I showed up.
Oh, wow. There's a baseball team that showed up for the playoffs. Well, or did they? You know, it's so funny. Last week, really upbeat podcast here, and, you know, it's kind of exciting couple of weeks for the Reds. And so we come into this. Last podcast was we're happy. Then Saturday, I did just a little short one the night after the Reds actually clinched the playoffs just by myself, 20 minutes, just saying, hey, let's be excited about this. Let's be happy about this. This is fun. Baseball's supposed to be fun. And you and I have talked about that more than anyone. Baseball's supposed to be fun. Yeah. And then did another podcast, a preview of the series. And here we are, you know, 1 week later, and it's over. Jason, what happened?
I don't even know. That was the strangest two games of playoff baseball I've ever seen.
It was. But wasn't it on brand for this team? I'm just saying, good pitching, no hitting. And it was kind of the extreme on both, yeah. But
it really was. And, you know, God, we can take a moment just to celebrate the best of that. Like, if we leave out the ninth inning today, the Reds held one of the very best offensive teams in baseball to two runs over the span of 21 innings.
And that's not overstating it. They really were legitimately one of the best offenses in baseball, maybe the best.
Yes, they were. I mean, what incredible pitching performances from essentially the entire staff.
Yeah. Going into the ninth inning of game two, it really looked like the Reds were going to lose these two games 1-0. They were going to lose the series. They'd give up two runs total and lose the series, get swept. Let's just quickly break down what happened for those of you that are under a rock. Game one, we were all so excited, and Trevor Bauer came out and was just as good as he's been all year. The first, I think, pitcher in postseason history to start a game and 12 strikeouts, no walks, and two or fewer hits. First pitcher in postseason history. And, of course, the Reds can't score, but neither can the Braves. The Reds bullpen comes in, shuts them down as well. 0-0 till we get to the 13th inning. And the Reds had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity and could not scratch a run across. And it was kind of inevitable because they missed so many opportunities that the Braves would push one across. And they didn't. They won 1-0 in 13. Man, they had the opportunities on Wednesday, didn't they, that game one?
They really did. I mean, they really, really did. That felt like a game. To me watching it, I kind of felt like the Reds were going to win until they did.
Yeah. I just kept waiting for somebody to run into one and hit a home run like we've seen all season.
Yeah.
And we get that run. You know, the first inning, the Reds had a couple on, and Votto, not a good at-bat in the first inning, and Moustakas, not a good at-bat, and they really failed to get Senzel let off with a single. And then they got, I think it's Castellanos got on as well, and they couldn't bring him in. And I thought, oh, man, that's an opportunity against a pretty good pitcher, because Max Fried, the starter for the Braves, pretty good. Not as good as the Reds made him look, maybe, but or maybe he is. He's pretty good. But as it turned out, it was just there were four or five other moments like that where the Reds just couldn't get it done.
Yeah, and you know, it was funny. So I was looking at the box score after that game, and I think with the exception of Moustakas, like, you can't really complain because all of the top, like, six or so hitters in the lineup had a couple of hits, you know? Like, if I told you before the game, I didn't tell you anything else that you'd get, you know, 11 hits from the top five spots in your lineup, you take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that's what, you know, four runs right there. And it just, I mean, they just didn't get bunched together like they needed to get bunched together, and it was awful.
Yeah, they left 13 runners on base, and just time and time again, runners in scoring position with less than two outs, and yeah. could not get them home. I just,
I mean, if they could have just gotten a ball into the outfield,
literally, they're like three times.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I specifically tweeted at one point, okay, just hit a fly ball deep enough.
Right, right. Oh, gosh. And then I think, you know, in the, I think it was the seventh inning. Oh, my goodness. Moustakas grounded out to lead off the inning. Aquino gets a single, and Jesse Winker's hit by a pitch. And so you got runners on first and second. Kyle Farmer grounds into a force out. And we're going to talk about Kyle Farmer in a moment. So he's at first, and Aquino's at third with two outs. Now, first and third, two outs. And David Bell brings in Matt Davidson to pinch hit. First pinch hitter off the bench for the Reds in the playoffs. Matt Davidson to replace Kurt Casale. And then decides to call for a delayed slash double steal with Freeman initially getting a rundown and then Aquino getting tagged out in another rundown.
Yeah.
Ends the inning. And after the game, David Bell, and listen, we're not going to have an anti-David Bell podcast here, but every move David Bell made on Wednesday backfired. Everything he did was screwed up. Except for the pitching decisions, I guess, because the pitchers did well, so let's give him credit for that, I suppose. But everything else he did went wrong. And he said after the game, that was my fault. Probably being too aggressive there, but I called for that. How do you pinch hit for somebody who doesn't get the bat off his shoulder because you immediately try to execute a double steal with Kyle Farmer and Aristides Aquino? I mean, what is that all about? Was he getting frantic? Was he because the Reds hadn't been able to score? He was just trying to make something happen?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he had a sense that he's thinking, well, you know how good the Braves bullpen is. I don't understand the pinch hitting if you're going to try a double steal. I don't understand that at all. But maybe you're thinking, well, the Braves bullpen is fantastic, which it was.
Right.
But our bullpen also is good. And here's a chance to score one run, and one run is going to win it today, which it did. You know, I mean, I'm just trying. I don't think that makes it the right decision. It was a bad decision, but just trying to get into his head and figure out what he could have been thinking.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's probably where he was going. And it wasn't a good decision. He said himself it wasn't a good decision, but just a stretch. In a 1-0 game, it's going to be like that. You had the play where Castellanos gets thrown out going first to third for the second out of the inning.
And, you know, that's a thing people got worked up about that I didn't have any problem with.
I didn't either.
If that throw was anywhere else than exactly where it was, he's safe.
Well, first of all, it's in front of him, so he sees it. And it seems to me, in a game like this, that's a reasonable chance to take. He's not the speed demon, but he's athletic. And, yeah, I didn't have a problem with that. Make him make a play.
Yeah.
I would have been the same way with the one with the Joey Votto, where he singled to left and he was on second. He didn't score. I probably, even with Votto, try to push it there and score just because we needed to do something. So maybe I'm arguing against what I said earlier about the double steal. Well, the double steal with Aristides Aquino and Kyle Farmer is always stupid. Get out of here.
Well, I mean, Aquino was fast. He doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. He's one of the fastest players on the team. He just doesn't look it because he's so tall and long and he's got those big strides, but he's fast.
Yeah, I'm not saying, I'm saying we don't have, neither of those guys are Billy Hamilton or Nick Senzel. Aquino absolutely is a great athlete.
Yeah.
And Farmer's reason.
Speed wise, I think Aquino and Senzel are the same.
Really?
Yeah. Here. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can look it up and it's the case.
Okay.
They're real close. I remember being surprised at how close they were.
You've never told me anything was correct on this podcast before, so I'm doubting it. But I had a text conversation with somebody about that play where Votto was on second and didn't score. And to me, it looked like Votto did the right thing because you're taught from a young age, this ball's a line drive. It bounced for him right before it got to the third baseman or something. But it's a line drive for a moment. And you're taught as a hitter to kind of lean back towards the base in case that ball's caught. See it through to the outfield is what they say. See it hit grass before you go. So he kind of had to hold up just a little bit. If he'd been going on the swing, yeah, he scores easy. So I understand why they held him up. or why he held up. I don't remember seeing the third base coach sending him around, but I wish they'd have taken a chance there because, again, you got to make the other team make a play. Those are different than a double steal to me. But it is what it is. We could list 100 different things. You know, Tucker Barnhart in both games keeps grounded out softly on plays with runner in scoring position. I mean, it's just they just didn't get it done. That's all there is to it.
They did not get it done. You're correct. They just didn't.
It's good analysis, huh?
Yeah, fine analysis, Chad.
So game two, the Reds come in, and what happens again? Luis Castillo. Well, first, let's go back. Let me read Turbauer's line before we talk about Castillo. Trevor Bauer, 7 2/3, two hits, no runs, no walks, 12 strikeouts, 7 2/3. So, great start. And then, of course, unbelievable work by Rosell Iglesias, Lucas Sims, Michael Lorenzen. Superb work. Now, game two on Thursday, Castillo goes 5 1/3, gives up 6 hits, 1 run, struck out 7, walked 1. So, I mean, that's kind of Castillo, right? We got what we wanted out of the pitchers.
Yeah.
And the Reds literally couldn't score. Got the 1 run off of Castillo, the double from Acuna, and that was it until the bottom of the eighth. But what's the explanation for this offense? You got any answers for me, Jason?
I don't have answers for you. And the kinds of answers I have are the kind of medium takes that everybody always gets mad at me about.
Well, I'm going to give you some opportunity for playing those takes.
Yeah, well, it's just like, well, I mean, that stinks. But also, I mean, yesterday especially, mostly it was probably just bad luck.
Yeah.
Which I know nobody wants to hear, but there it is.
You're right. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear BABIP all off season. Not one time.
A 2 out of 3 playoff series. Anything can happen in 2 games, and I think we all know that.
Why does anything always happen to the Reds, though?
Now that I don't know. I mean, it was brutal. It was very brutal. And this team just seems so snake bit in the playoffs. But also, you know, it's one of those things, and I think it's important for people to be aware of it. None of these Reds, except for Joey Votto, were on those teams. So they're not like, oh, I hope this isn't like last time. You know, they're not coming into it like that. So all of the things where we're all kind of, as fans of the team, traumatized by these past playoff experiences, I would never agree with somebody being like, oh, those players, you know, they felt the pressure because they didn't want it to be like last time. Man, that was a million years ago in baseball player years.
Baseball fan years. Reds fan years, too.
Well, that too. Yeah.
No, that's a good point, Jason. You know, those guys aren't thinking, oh, my gosh, Reggie Sanders, you know, and that great team in 95, you know, and we got to avenge that. But on the other hand, as fans, we do feel that, and we have to think about it. Our buddy Woo the Reds posted this on Twitter. It has been 2,916 days since the Reds last won a postseason game. It has been 9,127 days since the Reds last advanced in the postseason. Are we cursed?
I don't like those numbers. Those are too big. I would like them to be smaller.
Yes, much smaller. Like 0.
Yes.
The thing about the last few times the Reds been in the playoffs, and this will cover the playoffs for a lot of the people that are listening to this, the only playoffs they've ever experienced for the Reds. This year, this just historic disaster. The Reds are the first team to go scoreless in their first 22 innings in the playoffs since, I think, the 1912 Giants, I believe I saw, the New York Giants. It's just so historic.
I thought they passed that team. I thought they broke the record.
Oh, maybe with that last inning, they might have broken it. So it's the all-time record for futility to begin a playoff and end a playoff, as it turned out. So we have that this year, which is just, it's ridiculous. 2013, we have a team that, you know, is tied for, with 5 games to go in the season, they're tied for second and end up losing their last 5 games, but make it to the wild card game. And then we have that Johnny Cueto drop the ball wild card game. The Reds really were never in. just a kind of a disaster. That's on the scale of Reds disasters, that's pretty low, but still it's something, you know, that we remember, dropping that ball and one of the greatest pitchers in Reds history. But then 2012, I don't remember what happened in 2012, Jason. I think I blocked that out, but maybe you remember.
I don't have any memory of that whatsoever.
Well, something happened in 2012, and the Reds just absolutely vomited all over themselves on the field. That's all I can remember. Before that, 2010, and that's, you know, at the time we were all like, oh, what's a big deal? They'll make the playoffs plenty. But they get no hit in their first game in the playoffs, finally. First time after 15 years being in the playoffs, they get there and they get no hit in game one. So, you know, for a lot of Reds fans, this is what they've experienced. Either horrible baseball, where the Reds aren't even close, in the years when they are close and they actually get across the finish line, something crazy happens every time. We are cursed, aren't we?
Well, can I give at least a little bit of salve to that?
Sure, please.
At least we're not the Twins.
Oh, man, that's hard, isn't it? What's 18 straight?
18 straight playoff losses.
Oh, no, that hurts.
That, I mean.
On the other hand, how many playoff games have the Reds had during the time they lost those 18 playoff games? Well, that probably goes back a while. When does that go back to? That didn't go back to.
I don't know when that goes.
It goes
back.
Yeah, I don't either. Sure, yeah.
It goes back to before the Reds' last playoff run, I'm sure.
Yeah, the Reds are only on what? Four straight.
Yeah.
No, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight.
No. Oh, yeah, that wild card game. Okay.
Yeah. Right. 6 straight losses, so we're a third of the way there.
Chad.
I know. I'm sorry. Do we... Let's answer some viewer mail, because that's going to get us to where we need to go.
All right.
Some of these questions.
Take me where we need to go, Chad. Take me there.
Oh, my goodness. First of all, the first question comes from Bill Lack, who sent this. And I don't know that we need to answer all this right now, but this is a good way to kind of frame what we're going to be talking about today and for the rest of the offseason. In retrospect, did this team overproduce for those couple of weeks when they made their late season run? And how disappointing was their performance all season? And where does this team go moving forward? I think those are two pretty good questions. And we talked at one point, maybe you and I talked about, did we just overrate this team coming in? And I do want to talk later about how what we move going forward. But what do you think? Did we overrate them? Did they just overperform those 2 weeks? Are they that team? Are they the team we saw the rest of the year? Who are they?
Any team that finishes like 11-3 or whatever is overperforming. That's no baseball team is that good. So yes, they overperformed. But it's also, I mean, they also underperformed, right? Like leading up until that, you know, the all of the fancy projection systems thought the Reds would finish the season 31-29, and they finished the season 31-29.
Well, how come every David Bell team has underperformed?
Who says they underperformed?
I say they underperformed.
I don't know. Did they? I don't think they really did.
They only made the playoffs because a couple of hours before the season started, they decided to let everybody in the playoffs, and they barely did that. They certainly underperformed last year.
And I mean, you know, what did we think this? You know, back in the pre-COVID halcyon days of February and March, you and I were talking about this, and what we had them, what, like an 84-85 win team, right?
I need to go back and see.
I think we had a mid-80s, I think.
Probably.
And most people did, and they played like a mid-80 team. I mean, that's what 39, 31, and 29 projects out to. I don't think you can reasonably call this an underperformance. I think it's – I mean, the playoffs is devastating and horrible, and I would like to forget those two games, please. But also, like, in terms of how the regular season shook out, I mean, I think they did what everybody thought they would do. Now, it would have been a lot less stressful for us if we could have, like, you know, jingle-jangled some of that around a little bit and just had kind of a nice, easy, hanging around 500 all year season instead of having to come back like they did. But I don't think they underperformed this year. I think the offense underperformed. I think the pitching overperformed. I think it was a weird year also. And I don't, you know, this is one of those things where everything about this season was so strange. And, you know, in terms of figuring out what's going to happen next year, I'm kind of ready to throw this season for the most part out the window, because I will never believe that you can really tell anything that you want to make long-term decisions about from 60 games.
Well, we're going to have that question, no doubt about it. I disagree with your assessment on whether they underperformed. I mean, I think they had 2 weeks where they looked good, and they were trash the rest of the year. Trash. They had good pitching that kind of dragged them, you know, to be able to stay in the race.
So, well, let's be clear then. So what you're saying is that the offense was trash.
Yeah.
You can't say that the pitching staff was trash. The pitching staff was...
It's the only thing that kept them around.
Well, the pitching staff was excellent the whole year.
Right.
I mean, so really what you're talking about is that the offense had 40 bad games, which is an underperformance by the offense. But you didn't ask if the offense underperformed. You asked if the team underperformed, and I don't think they did, because I don't think anybody expected the pitching. While we expected it to be good, I don't think we expected it to be this good. I certainly didn't.
The offense not part of the team?
It is, but what I'm saying is that when you balance the overperforming of the pitching with the underperforming of the offense, you have a team that performed more or less where your expectations were in the first place.
Okay, listen, everything you're saying is reasonable, and I'm trying to play devil's advocate a little bit with you here, because that's, you know, that's what we do in law school.
I know all you know how many friends I have who are lawyers, Chad.
You get it. You understand. But to me, everything you're saying, listen, completely reasonable and great arguments. But I watched a team for, I'd say, 45 games that was really difficult to watch. The defense was awful. The base running, they were the third worst base running team in the league. The offense was just uniformly horrible. And yes, the pitching overperformed, which is why I'm not so optimistic about next year. A little preview of what I'm going to say later. I don't expect the pitching can duplicate this, and we just wasted it this year. But I just know that I suffered through watching a team that was really, really bad or hard to watch. And maybe some of that's because of you know, the way the offense was, and they were overly reliant on the home run ball, and that's not as much fun to watch anyway. But I think you can argue either way, and I don't think that you're wrong, but I just think that we watched a team that was really difficult to watch for a long time. And then they finished the season, and anything you're right can happen in a three-game series, but this team was impossible to watch these last 2 days. It was embarrassing. So, anyway, you want to tell me why I'm wrong, or you want to move on to some questions?
Let's move on to some questions. I'll try to sneak in why you're wrong.
Okay. Yeah, just you know, sprinkle it in as we go. Before we do that, we have to give a big thank you to our newest patron at patreon.com/redlegradio. And I don't know where we're going to go on this one. You know, we always give him a position on our beer league softball team. But this guy's name is John Majeski. I presume that's how you pronounce it, because it's spelled exactly the same way as our old friend Gary Majeski.
Well, somebody's got to be a relief pitcher then, huh?
Yeah, but let's make him a left-handed relief pitcher to distinguish him from Gary.
Okay.
And let's make sure he has a healthy arm. Unlike Gary.
Yes, let's please do that.
Gary, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it, and enjoyed getting to meet you at our Slack channel as well. All right, first question comes from Charlie Zollers. Charles asks, at least we get to watch Tottenham interrupted now, right? Charles, he's coming after my own. You know, Tottenham today, I just got to tell you, they won 7-2 to qualify for the group stages of the UEFA Europa League. I'm sure you knew that, Jason, but I'm just telling our viewers.
I don't know soccer.
Tottenham Hotspur. All right. The second part of his question is, but seriously, where does this rank amongst Reds' disappointments for you guys? It's a good question. Where does this rank amongst Reds' disappointments for us? It's not close to 2012, right?
No, I mean, this was a solid team that snuck into the playoffs in the craziest can be year and lost, I mean, embarrassing fashion, but lost 2 out of 3. Like, I don't know, it sucks, but I'm going to give me a couple months and I'll be ready to have my heart broken again.
Yeah, I don't know that this ranks that highly, honestly, because in the back of my mind, I mean, I knew this team had it in them to do it, and it was fun to watch them for a couple of weeks. But in the back of my mind, I never really felt like this team is capable of big. I thought they were capable. I take that back. I did think they were capable of big things.
And, you know, let's be honest about something here, too, that the context matters a lot. Like, though it would have hurt, if they had lost these games, say, 3-2 and 4-3, that would have hurt, but it wouldn't have felt quite as apocalyptic as what just happened. Which, what just happened was a couple outs away from being 1-0, 1-0.
That's an excellent point.
And that, you know, so the context hurts, and that's, again, why I'm like, let's not forget about the pitching that just happened, because that was some pitching. You hold the Braves to 2 runs for that many innings. That's impressive.
Yeah, and as with everything else this whole season, we can't really focus on that because the offense is so bad. You know, I think Jason, you're right. I mean, it doesn't really rate up there. It's a disappointment. This team had the ability, I think, to go far. I will still always believe that because of what we actually saw, the pitchers. We just needed, you know, not even average hitting, just acceptable hitting, you know. But I didn't – they hadn't given me much reason to believe they were actually going to do anything. So, you know, you have some expectations to be disappointed.
What I will say, I'm gonna poke my head in here, is that what I think was really exposed the last couple of days in a way that the Reds had mostly had been able to cover it up until now – was how weak the bottom third of the lineup was.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about, because when we're talking about the hitting, again, yesterday, Votto had a couple of hits, Senzel had, I think, 3 hits, Castellanos had a couple of hits, Gino had a hit. Like, the top of the lineup did their job yesterday. There weren't extra base hits, but, you know, those kind of happen when they happen. But the top of the lineup did its job yesterday. The problem was that for far too long, the Reds have been relying on Freddie Galvis, Kyle Farmer, Tucker Barnhart, et cetera, which are guys who I'm sure they're fine human beings, but they're not hitters.
Yeah. We listen, we'll go back into our archives and find you and I talking in the offseason. The Reds need to go out and get a shortstop, a catcher. You were outfield, we also said, but you know, these are the areas they have to address. And they didn't address either of them. Either of those two.
Tucker is a friend of the podcast, and he really is a great guy. But, man, I was today, anytime he was coming up in crucial at-bats, I was wishing that Stevenson was on the roster.
Yeah. He's a backup catcher. I mean, there's no shame in saying that. He's not a good hitter. He's just not. We can pretend that Casale is, because he had 72 good at-bats or whatever, or decent at-bats. But those guys are not. They didn't get the job done when we needed it. And shortstop, let me tell you, I love the way that, again, I'm going to quote our buddy Wu, who I can't get to drop the veil of anonymity, but he said, it's a complete failure. There's no more evidence of the failure of this front office than the fact that in the first playoff game in 7 years, the Cincinnati Reds starting shortstop was Kyle Farmer. I mean, Kyle Farmer can say he started a playoff game at shortstop. I mean, how's that a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. You know, Todd Benzinger started a playoff game, too. I mean, crazy things happen.
I guess.
You know, I mean, I think most teams have a guy like that. Even playoff teams often have a guy where you're like, wow, that's the weak link on the team, huh? The problem really, though, again, was the bottom third of the lineup. Amounted to being a weak link.
Yeah, the black holes, multiple black holes combined with some of your regular players you expect to contribute.
Yeah, I mean,
for the whole season, were awful.
The Reds got essentially no offense from their shortstops this entire year.
Yeah. Well, should have kept Jose Iglesias. In terms of where it ranks among Red disappointments, it's not. Yeah, it's not up there with 2012. It's not up there with 1999 to me. So, you know, I don't. It's a garden variety Reds disappointment. I'm used to Reds disappointments at this point. So, Nathan Connor, The Reds hitters look so far away from being a real playoff team. They didn't belong out there. If there's a case to be made against expanding the playoffs, these two games are Exhibit A and B. Perhaps COVID-19 spared Reds fans from having to watch this lineup for 100 more games than was originally scheduled. Clearly, changes are needed. We've got all winter to discuss that, but for now, I just want to say how unfulfilling that was, but at least we can commiserate with one another. That's why we're here, Nathan. Appreciate the, not a question, but the comment. Kyle Kapler, do the Reds realize they can score a run, not from a home run? I'm not convinced that they realize that. You think they realize that, Jason? I think they realize it. They just don't know how. That goes back to it. Maybe you can comment on this quickly. That goes back to something that I've heard some people say, and I think there's some validity to it. This offense was very poorly constructed. I mean, they don't have guys that get on base enough and to set the table. And then, of course, at least two serious black holes in the lineup. So the guys, think about the guys they went out to get this offseason. They went out and got Mike Moustakas, who I like, but, career on base of .310. They went out and got Nick Castellanos, who I like, career on base, .324. Better. But again, these are not high on base guys. They're guys that are going to sit around and, Moose is who he is. He's going to look for a home run.
I think I'm going to disagree with you a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, and I mean, I'm going to try not too hard to go on the BABIP monster. And I'll tell you, I'm sure there will be some good analysis done. And I'm really interested to see if people dig in the numbers and find, was this really fluky? Because very few of the Reds players were consistent from past seasons. Actually, Moose's BABIP was kind of in line with his career. It ended up, he's been a poor BABIP guy historically. But Castellanos was way down. Suarez was way down. Votto was way down. Suarez and Votto and Winker, and Winker ended up having a pretty good season, though he slumped badly in the second half. His numbers overall were pretty good. But those three together are typically very good on base guys. They get on base. Even Joey and Jesse managed to still have good on-base percentages this year. But Gino really didn't. His on-base percentage was way down, but that really looks like a BABIP artifact. So I don't know. Again, I think the way in which this team was poorly constructed was that they didn't have a top caliber shortstop or a catcher. I think that the weaknesses that they tried and failed to fill last offseason are ultimately what kind of caught up to them this season. Because there was no margin for error, really, in a 60-game season with, a couple of positions that you just couldn't count on for any offensive contribution.
Yeah. I'm frustrated, Jason.
It's frustrating.
Next two questions, I'm going to take them together because they are. We get to a similar point there. Matt LaCron asks, what will it take to keep Trevor Bauer, if it's even possible? And what's the missing piece to this team? We thought it was someone like Castellanos / Moose last year. Chuck Nichols asks, some positives to take away from this season if the Reds' pitching is championship caliber. The Reds' offense, on the other hand, still needs work. Who do you think the Reds should sign to improve their offense next year? Now, we've kind of been dancing around that a little bit, but let me see if I can briefly give you my thoughts on the offseason. And I'm going to need to think about this more to flesh it out in more detail. But I think that what do I always say here? Hope is not a strategy. And we can hope as fans, but the front office cannot. If the Reds go into this offseason thinking that the pitching is going to be just as good next year, they're out of their mind. Maybe it will be. It's highly unlikely, in my opinion. Okay. Trevor Bauer, what will it take to keep Trevor Bauer? I don't know. They have to try. I don't know how much teams are going to be willing to spend. I just don't know. So I hope they can keep him based on how he performed this year. I'd like to have that again, but look at his track record. He's not going to be this good again. Is this a 2-month fluke? I don't know. Not a fluke, because he's pitched really well before, but he's got a great chance of winning the Cy Young Award.
Yeah.
But say they can't keep him. The pitching's going to be worse anyway, and they lose him, it's definitely going to be worse. And with this offense, I don't... Here's what I fear. I fear that the Reds are going to just say, Jose Garcia is our shortstop, and Tyler Stevenson's our catcher. And I'm okay with those two things by themselves, you know, in a vacuum. But then they're going to say, and we think everybody else is going to be better than they were. We hope they're going to be better, the offense, these players, because they've been better at times in the past. That's what I fear. That Castellini's going to pull the purse strings tight, and that they're just going to say, well, we were unlucky. And look, we got these two shiny new prospects to put out there for you. And so, again, and they're going to hope that they get better. Now, tell me that that's not going to happen, or whatever you want to say, Jason. Criticize me.
All right. I think Stevenson as the starting catcher next season is a lock.
I do too.
I think that is an absolute lock. And frankly, I don't know that they could get anybody you'd rather have.
I think that's probably true.
I think I'll come back to shortstop in a second. I'm going to real quick say a few things about, like, we think everybody's going to be better. Do I think Moustakas is going to be better? No. He was more or less in line with his career numbers this year. I think he'll be who he was.
He's a little better than his career numbers this year, if you can believe it.
Yeah. Do I think that – which it's important to remember, he's a second baseman, right? Second baseman don't hit like first baseman.
A 32-year-old second baseman as well next year, if we're talking about him improving. Yeah.
You know, I think Akiyama probably will be a little bit better overall. I think he needed an adjustment, right?
But we don't know that.
We don't, but I think he will. He seemed to come around real well the second half. I think at this point, I hate to say it, but I think we're entering the time when Senzel has to be a question mark. I think Winker pretty much is who he is. I am 100% certain, barring injury, Eugenio Suarez will be better next year. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. I think Castellanos will probably be better, and I think Votto will probably... and arrive at approximately the same level of value that he had this year, but he'll probably do it in a different way. So I think that, and I could see a case for Votto being a little bit better because he did make adjustments and he was unlucky, but I think 15 to 20% above average as a hitter is kind of all you're asking for from Joey Votto at this point. So I think if I'm concerned at this point, I'm concerned up the middle. I'm concerned at center field. I'm concerned at shortstop, and I'm concerned at catcher. And for a shortstop, I would ask Cleveland what it takes for Francisco Lindor. And then, unless I think Jose Garcia is magically morphing into a superstar at AAA, along about the middle of the season, I hand Francisco Lindor a check, and I tell him to put in whatever number he wants.
We've been saying that for a while, and I still think it's a great idea. You know, it's got to be, they got to get somebody. They've got to get a real player in this lineup somewhere. I would quibble a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit with your analysis. I think that Moustakas is not going to be better. He might be.
Be better. I said I thought he'd be the same.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, he's, no, I wasn't arguing with you on that one. I'm just going through and looking at some of these players. I think that we got what we can expect out of him. Suarez is the only one that I'm confident will be better. The only one that I'm confident will be perform better than he did this year. And remember, this is a historically bad offense for the Reds. There's one player in the lineup that I am confident. The rest of them are kind of hope. Like Shogo, I feel like he will be better. But I mean, the guy had a 357 on base.
You lapse into hyperbole for a second. This is not a historically bad offense.
Worst batting average ever.
Huh?
Worst batting average ever.
Chadwick. Is it 1987, Chad?
You tell me. Because I wish that we were within 3 years of the Reds winning a championship.
Well, next thing, Chad's going to be back to talking to us about the importance of pitcher wins.
I've been there.
Come back to earth, my friend.
Historically bad in the playoffs and the worst batting average ever. So, not a good offense. There's no argument this was a good offense.
There is not. You are correct.
And so, right, I did lapse into hyperbole. And I look here and I see one player that I feel reasonably certain is going to improve. And that's Eugenio Suarez. Now, how much he'll improve over this year's numbers, you know, he was roughly at league average hitter even this year, the way he finished the season. But he'll be better. Akiyama might, but the guy had a 357 on base percentage this year. You know, we may not be able to expect a whole lot more. I don't know. I feel like probably based on the way he progressed.
Second. I think Akiyama, again, might get there a little bit differently, but base hits matter. And I think he's likely to get a few more base hits than he got this year.
Yeah, it's possible. Right. I'm not saying that definitely not going to happen. What I'm saying with all these guys except for Suarez is if the Reds are hoping that that's what happens, they're being foolish. Castellanos, he may be better, but let's be honest, his numbers aren't that far off his career numbers. They were a little below. Not that far off.
Yeah, I mean, I think Castellanos will be better because he is one of those guys. His career batting average on balls in play is .329. This year it was .257. Elsewhere, he's pretty much in line with his career numbers. So 60-game sample, that kind of looks like maybe there was some bad luck. You know, if that's anywhere near his career levels, then I think we're very happy with the performance from this year.
I'm not listening to the bad luck nonsense.
Okay.
Maybe. And if he doesn't opt out, and I don't think he will after this season, I think he's back. He's probably better, and the Reds are going to, if he's here, he's going to be playing. Worst defensive outfielder I've seen since, the worst ever. I'm not going to invoke the name of our beloved Saint Dunn. Winker's good. I got no problems with Winker. I've hesitated on this one. I made it last because I think we've seen the high water mark of Joey Votto's career for the rest of his career, his numbers this year. I hope he's average over a full 162-game season. I'm just not convinced.
He was above average this year, right?
He was. Yeah. He was. Okay. He was. Thanks to a couple weeks, which, you know, those weeks count. But I didn't see a whole lot that gave me confidence that he's going to age particularly. Well, it's good. He's going to age gracefully, more gracefully than a lot of people do.
Yeah.
You know, he's delayed it pretty well to this point in a lot of ways, but... So the Reds have to have, they've got to get at least one like big time impact bat in the lineup and where, you know, center field, are you going to give up on Senzel? You know, what year was Senzel was drafted in 16?
Do you agree with me though, that at this point, Senzel's got to be a little bit of a question mark?
I hate to say it because I still think he's got a boatload of talent, but I mean, he has a hard time staying on the field. Number one. At this point, we have to concede that, and yeah, that's where I was going. He is he was the 2016 number two overall pick. Now the Reds' first round pick in 15 was Tyler Stevenson, right?
Yeah.
When we get to 2021, you know, you would expect two first round picks like that to be, you know, factors on your big league team by 2021. I mean, I know Stevenson's a catcher, and he was drafted out of high school.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I think that you do go with Senzel. He's still got all that talent. But it's got to translate into performance on the field,
It is one of those things also, and it's worth noting that I need to look again, but last I recall, there is – not much on the free agent market this year. Like, and especially not much in areas that would hit the Reds' needs.
Yeah.
You know, unless you wanted to do something like throw a bunch of money at Chris Bryant and see if he wants to play outfield.
I like it.
And then you put Shogo in center every day, I more or less assume.
I guess. I don't know. Can we move Senzel back to shortstop? Go out and get an outfielder?
You have to talk to the Reds about that, Chad.
No thanks. They're not returning my calls these days. All right, two more questions, and then let's get out of this one. Hooper Powell, our buddy, says, let's not forget we had a winning season. That's true. It's true. I meant to say something about what Jason said earlier, which is that if the Reds lose, you know, 4-3 and 5-4 some of these two games, we're probably like, oh, that disappointing. But oh well, you know. I think it's the way they lost puts such, it reminds us of all the weaknesses they had throughout the season that we can't forget them now. with the optimism of the end of the season. So anyway, Hooper says, I think a manager can only do so much, but I also feel that a team takes on the personality of its manager. Am I wrong? I don't know. Is he wrong?
I don't know of any evidence that feels like confirmation bias to me.
Yeah. I don't know what the evidence is of that. And Hooper, we'd be happy to tell us at Slack exactly what you mean by that. But it's an opportunity to talk about David Bell, which I don't think either of us want to do right now. I think we both agree that those that are calling for the firing of David Bell, if I'm in charge, I'm not firing David Bell after this season.
Yeah. Listen, at this point, with the way modern baseball teams are run, I'm not firing David Bell because his players clearly like playing for him and clearly feel like they believe in him. And if that's the case, then as far as I'm concerned, the manager's doing his job. You make a couple of bonehead in-game decisions, yeah, but every manager does that from time to time.
Well, my counter to that is I don't care how well they like playing for him if that doesn't manifest itself on the field. At some point, it's got to show up on the field if he's doing good at some part of his job, right? I'll firmly contend that.
It depends. I mean, by that stretch, the much maligned Dusty Baker is one of the best managers we've ever had.
I think that in terms of regular season games.
I mean, his teams always overperformed, right? They're always better than they're supposed to be.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. And we've come to appreciate Dusty Baker, although we said it at the time, that you know his voodoo doesn't work in the off season or in the postseason. But there's a reason why his teams are always in the mix, because he knows how to manage players in the dugout or in the clubhouse, and they generally like playing for him. And that's what I heard about David Bell. And you kind of alluded to that a moment ago, is that, you know, his players like playing for him, and they all like him. I'm thinking, at some point, isn't that going to show up on the field? It did with Dusty, and I don't see the evidence that it has with David Bell.
Well, I mean, I think this is the first year he's had a team that you could remotely call competitive. So, you know, you give Dusty Baker what David Bell has had the last 2 years before this season, and I doubt you see much better results.
I don't know, actually. I'm not all in on David Bell. I'm not on the fire David Bell camp either. I think that's silly. I mean,
I'm
at this
not
point.
All in on David Bell either. I'm not ever all in on any manager. I think that the importance of managers is drastically overrated, and they're mostly puppets for upper management at this point who get scapegoated whenever they need a scapegoat.
Well, we need a scapegoat because this team has flamed out once again.
Because let's not forget, you know who's really responsible for this team, Chad?
Tell me.
Bob Castellini.
Yep. And he's not getting fired.
Nope.
And, you know, is he going to fire anybody in the front office?
No, they're all related to him or somebody he knows.
Yeah. Well, David Bell is too.
Well, there you go.
Buddy Bell's son. Yeah, that's what I fear, is that what we're going to get is we went out and spent a lot of money for nothing because we got nothing out of it. And Bob Castellini's got to be hot right now about what value he got out of the $148 million he spent or whatever, which, you know, is a slightly below average payroll. But I think David Bell needs to be on the hot seat just because this team needs to show that somebody's going to be accountable for this mess.
Well, hold on. He only really spent about $50 million. They didn't, you know, the players didn't play 2/3 of the season.
Oh, gosh, Jason. Are you a lawyer?
He didn't spend $150 million this year.
Are you a lawyer?
No, but I know plenty, as I said.
All right. Last question. Comes from Woo. Trio of Woo the Reds mentions today. Joey Votto's played in 11 postseason games over 15 seasons. Mike Trout has played in 3 postseason games over 10 seasons. Neither has ever advanced in the postseason. Which is more depressing for the game of baseball? And does it speak to a problem with baseball, as arguably the two best players over the previous decade are seen so little in the postseason? What do you think, Jason?
I think Votto is more disappointing for Reds fans. Trout is more disappointing for baseball overall. But baseball has always been that way. There have always been historically great players who never got rings. I mean, Ted Williams never got a ring, and Banks never got a ring. It's easier for that to happen now because there are so many more teams. You know, back when there were 16 teams, great players often, you know, got into the play, you know, made it once or twice, and it was enough to get a ring. Now, I mean, you know, the 2012 Reds can flame out against a wild card team.
Yeah. Well, the Reds were the number 7 seed. They, you know, they're the one.
Yeah. Or this, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just
right. No, you're exactly right. I think that's part of the charm of baseball in some ways, because every a player, one particular player is not going to impact the game enough to make enough of a difference. And that's why, you know, I hear these arguments about, oh, Votto's never been on a winning team. It's his fault somehow, you know. Baseball's not like that. So, but the flip side of what Boo says here is I would not be surprised if we start to see a real push that we will never again have playoffs, regular playoffs. The playoffs we have now will be the system going forward. That's my prediction.
I if the players union is smart, that will not happen.
If the players union is smart.
I mean, I'm just saying, if the players union is smart, if more than half the teams make the playoffs every year, there is no motivation to try to win more than 85 games, and that kills player salaries.
You absolutely got in ahead of what I was getting ready to say there. What's Bob Castellini going to do if he only has to finish in eighth place? Is he going to go spend a ton of money? No.
You will never see another great Reds team ever if it only takes 85 wins to get into the playoffs, at least not until Bob Castellini has passed the team on to somebody else.
Yep. Oh, you know, I wrote an article several years ago, a column at Cincinnati Magazine, about the promises that this ownership group made. I tweeted that out again today, and pump up my own column, but go look at that. Look at those promises they made when this ownership group took over in 2006. And they've completely failed. We're going on 15 years now. They have completely failed to deliver anything that they promised, with one exception. So go look at that and see. And the one exception has nothing to do with baseball. It's out in the community, what they're going to do in the community. And I think they've delivered on that. But that column is as true today as it was then. I'm sick of excuses. I'm sick of BABIP. I'm sick of small market. I'm sick of freaking excuses. We waste so much time following this team, and either they're going to deliver, or I don't know. I'm going to keep talking about this team. I don't know what kind of a threat I'm trying to make. Jason, you got any final thoughts?
Well, you know, everybody take a deep breath. In a couple of months, Chad, you all know that in a couple of months, Chad's going to be like, you know, Jason, I think this team this year, you know, TJ Antone, he really came on last year.
You act like you've spoken to me before in an off season.
We've met.
Jason, appreciate you joining us. Red Leg Nation Radio, whatever. Let's put this stupid season to bed. It was, except for 2 weeks, complete garbage from beginning to end. And I still kind of can't wait for opening day next year. Ugh. For Jason Linden and BABIP, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.